Hello, I'm Navbahor Imamova in Washington. You're watching The Voice of America. Uzbekistan and the world, Uzbek citizens and their human rights. Obviously, there is a lot to discuss, and we want to do that with someone who has been researching Uzbekistan for a long time, someone who has had quite a complex relationship with this country, specifically with its government, and most recently, he has been welcomed back and is now in the capital city of Tashkent. Steve Swerdlow of Human Rights Watch joins us via Skype. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
So who would have thought a couple of years ago that you would be allowed back into the country, let alone talk to the government as well as everyone else? Are you opening an office in Tashkent? Where do things stand?
Yeah, I mean, thinking back to the last time we had an interview, things have absolutely done 180 degrees in terms of our access. We are seeing good signs in the sense that we've been able to come back, we've been able to have meetings with the government, and we've been able to start our work. We're taking the question of whether we open up an office step by step, but we are starting the process of re-engaging with the authorities, but also continuing the work that we've been doing for 25 years, but now on the ground again. And I think that's just it's a wonderful feeling to be back here. It's really meaningful. There's no substitute for being able to be on the ground, meeting with so many of the partners that I've spent, you know, many Skype conversations with, and now can see in person.
So before we move on to other important topics, we want to hear your take on what happened in New York on October 31st. You are an American, you speak Uzbek, you know many Uzbek Americans, and your work has been focused a lot on radicalism and extremism and how the governments in Central Asia have been fighting these problems.
First, I want to express my sympathies and my condolences to the victims of this terrible tragedy and their families. This is a horrific incident for everyone. My thoughts are also, in particular, given the work that I do with the Uzbek American community, which I think is probably, at this moment in particular, is reeling from these incidents, feeling a lot of fear and apprehension, especially given what we're hearing from President Trump. I think, as you said, issues of radicalization are really complicated, and it's still too early to tell what led this individual to commit this terrible, heinous crime. And obviously, we should not overemphasize his Uzbek nationality in this process, but it is important to understand the context of the country that is now being batted around in the media. I've heard radio shows, I've heard Western news shows making really wild generalizations and oversimplifications about Uzbekistan as a hotbed of Islamic extremism, and that's really not helpful. I think it adds to a lot of fear and bad policy. One of the first things that I think about is, given this tragedy, we really need to unpack what radicalized this individual. And, to some extent, there's been a lot of conversations about the number of Uzbeks in terrorism-related incidents just in the last year in Turkey, in Sweden, in St. Petersburg. And these really are serious, and they deserve a lot of scrutiny. And I think if there's one thing that perhaps binds some of these attacks together, it's at least the appearance that these individuals were radicalized outside Uzbekistan, that they were very marginalized, isolated, dislocated, dealing with a lot of complicated issues in migration, and perhaps lacked real context. I think what perhaps binds these different incidents together is that these individuals were radicalized outside of Uzbekistan. They were isolated, marginalized, dislocated. Of course, that's in no way to excuse the absolute heinous crimes that they commit. But it's important to understand that context. And I've been adding somewhat to the discussion the Uzbekistan context, which is that I think the Uzbek government's policies on human rights, the terrible corruption, the poverty, the socioeconomic conditions in Uzbekistan, in large part drove millions of young Uzbek men abroad to seek employment, to seek other opportunities, and a small percentage of those people may have turned to ISIS and other radical movements. And it's important that we understand that context, that the human rights situation in Uzbekistan is relevant. It's important to engage with that. And finally, I would say on this specific case, I would be very unhappy to see the things that President Trump is talking about come to pass. I think the lottery program is very important. I know families that are getting ready to become beneficiaries of this very program and leave the United States very soon from Central Asia, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. And I've seen so many successful cases of Uzbek Americans making themselves the American dream. It would be a real tragedy to see that happen, to see the program done away with. And I also think adding Uzbekistan to a list of banned countries would be a terrible thing for our government to do, the U.S. government to do.
Steve, you're almost starting to answer my next question, which is basically what could be the real policy implications of this case, both in Tashkent and in Washington?
One thing, in fact, you noted in one of your tweets was that for the first time we saw the Uzbek embassy in the United States put out a statement with the condolences of President Mirziyoyev condemning this action very quickly. We've never seen that sort of head-on confrontation from the Uzbek government of an incident like this. And it's extremely constructive, I think, to see Tashkent engaging quickly, condemning the action, offering assistance. Of course, there are some more routine things that we can expect that might put us on edge, which is, for example, if the Uzbek government were to crack down conduct wide-ranging sweeps of people in Tashkent and in the rest of the country, using terrorism justifications to abuse human rights. That would be the bad response. We haven't necessarily seen that yet. And on the U.S. side of things, there are many implications for this as well. President Trump has been talking about doing away with the lottery program. That's, again, a terrible thing to do. He's also been talking about Guantanamo, throwing around things that violate our Constitution. And, you know, it's also, from a pragmatic perspective, it's in our interest for the U.S. federal court system to take a close look at this case, examine all the evidence, and that way we can better understand what led him to radicalism. I think it's highly responsible for discussions about Guantanamo to take place. There are obviously constitutional guarantees for U.S. residents. And there's also a lot of evidence that the Guantanamo trials have stalled, have taken years. Many have been unsuccessful and ineffective. So I just simply don't see the logic behind those statements. And I really hope that this case will lead us to a deeper understanding. And I do hope that, we've seen it from the New York authorities and from the mayor of New York, but I really hope that the Uzbek American community does not feel like it's being targeted and it feels safe and is being treated with the same rights that all Americans should be treated.
Steve, you have been in Tashkent now for at least a couple of days. What are the conversations like about this case in Tashkent? Just briefly, what are people saying to you?
People are very shocked. People are ashamed. People really are just scratching their heads and saying, how could this happen? Why one of us, in a sense? I think from the variety of people that I've spoken with about the case, they may be jumping to some generalizations and there's not much information available yet, but a lot of them seem to think that, these cases, what tie them together, again, is this ignorance, lack of education, lack of opportunity, just a real lack of context that some of these young people have growing up here. And I think they lament that fact. So somewhere in the conversation, I think there is a painful recognition that there are some serious gaps in the education system, in the social and communal networks, societal networks that should be, helping to form individuals in a stronger way. Of course, though, these sorts of things happen across many societies and countries. So to be honest, I think it's a very painful topic for the people that I've met with.
We're talking to Steve Swerdlow, who's joined us from Tashkent. So, Steve, the word progress is being used quite often when experts, journalists, the members of the international community discuss the situation in Uzbekistan and its new president. You recently issued a big report on your first trip to Uzbekistan and the policy changes that you are seeing. How does the term progress apply to human rights?
Well, we've been using the term cautious optimism, or cautious optimism for change. And, you know, as someone who's been watching this country develop and watching its human rights situation, I try to look at the facts and the evidence and to break down the many elements of the human rights picture here, which for a long time, as you know so well, has been one of the world's most atrocious human rights records. But I think it's undeniable and, you know, very remarkable that in the last 13 months, there have been positive steps taken by the government, really significant ones. And the key question in all of this that I think we keep repeating is that, you know, we obviously encourage all these steps that are positive. And the real question is, will they become institutional? Will they become structural changes? Will they be really funneled into the DNA, really become part of the political system? And there's, you know, we make a lot of recommendations in the report, and we try to look segment by segment. We started with, you know, perhaps the three or four areas where we've seen real concrete progress. First of all, political prisoners. There have been, by our count, at least 16 political prisoners released in the last 13 the presidency. And, you know, of course, when weighed against thousands of political prisoners, that may seem insignificant. But when compared with the one or two or sometimes zero prisoners that were released each year of Karima's rule in the past 12 years and even before, 16 is not nothing. It's something. It's significant. And, of course, these cases were all very high profile. Some of them individuals like Mohammed Bekjanov that carried with them a real sensitive context in the sense that they were individuals associated with the opposition. And so, of course, we're welcoming those things. When I was here in early September, I got to meet with the wife of Azam Farmonov, who was released a few weeks later, met with the wife of the imprisoned journalist Salihjon Abdurrahmanov, and to meet them and to then see their relatives freed was just amazing. And I think, of course, we have to take a moment to recognize that positive change. Another area where we've seen good steps in the right direction has been, I think, the way the president has been reducing the space between the citizenry and the government. As you know, he's been making a lot of speeches about the need for public officials to be on social media, to be accountable. And, you know, we had heard some of that rhetoric from Karimov in the past, but Mirziyoyev has really been putting, I think, his money where his mouth is in the sense that he has invested serious institutional resources into creating a network of presidential reception centers in cities, in rayons, in oblasts across the country. And from our research, these presidential reception centers have been successful by and large. A lot of citizens have reported to us that they go to these reception centers and they're able to make grievances about, you know, the gas being turned off, or the corrupt doctor in the local hospital, or disputes over property, or having trouble processing their passport. And many of them, in contrast to their earlier experiences, have actually gotten results. And I think, you know, it's hard to overestimate how significant that is in a country where previously there was a sense that the government completely forgot about you. You were invisible. And in fact, you know, Islam Karimov was known for dismissing the plight of millions of migrants who were forced to leave the country for opportunity. So that is significant. I think the president should continue doing things like this. And really, he should continue to encourage all of the pieces of the government bureaucracy to uphold their end of the bargain. Another area that we've seen good things happening in, but it's really a mixed picture, of course, is in the area of media and freedom of expression. We have seen live TV talk show programs that appeared in the spring. They were abruptly discontinued after a few weeks, after some intervention from the prime minister. But the fact that they appeared, the fact that government officials were coming on TV and answering sensitive questions, that is unprecedented. That's really important for this country, and we think that that should be happening more. We've seen some of the state-sponsored or state-owned media acting slightly more courageously. Outlets like Kun.uz, even Podrobna.uz and Gazeta.uz have been moving slightly beyond their previous comfort zones. And I think it's going to be a period now where journalists and the media are testing the boundaries. And the president needs to do more to encourage that from happening. But I have to qualify this in the sense that there have been things that have gone the other way. We've seen journalists be arrested just in late September. And I've been getting news while I've been here and reports from sources of really some of the same old practices that we saw happening under Karimov continuing to happen now. We saw the journalist Babumurod Abdullayev detained and held incommunicado without charges for several days, and then he turned up and was charged with up to 20 years on very vague extremism charges. We've been hearing that the lawyers for him are not able to get access. We also saw the writer, the author, Nurullah Mohammad Raufkhan, a very interesting case, a well-known author, listened to President Mirziyoyev's call, heeded his call to return to the country. He had gotten some news while he was in Turkey, where he was in exile, that he was no longer on a blacklist and that he should feel fine to come back to Uzbekistan. So he took that literally. And when he returned on September 27th, he was arrested in the airport and charged with extremism and detained. His case is interesting because he was released 2 days later into house arrest, something we don't see happen very often in Uzbekistan when extremism is mentioned. But of course, since I've been here in the country, we've seen things, again, go both ways. We've seen information that his book, Bukunlar, These Days, was for the second time qualified as an extremist piece of literature. And what it really is a book that is slightly critical of Karimov. So it's those things where I think the government is struggling to find its path, if I can put it in the most generous way. And it's our job, I think, in the human rights community to push it in the right direction and to call out the abuses that are happening, as well as the areas where things are going well.
So speaking of the human rights community, let's focus on the domestic human rights community. Who are your partners, or let's say potential partners in Uzbekistan? We know that you have been talking to many people, including policymakers, lawmakers, private sector, civil society, and also individual activists. How willing do they seem to work with you, to cooperate with you in your projects, or perhaps involve you in their endeavors?
Well, I mean, you just listed a number of the partners that we would work with. And, you know, Uzbekistan is so fascinating in the sense that it's such a young country with such a young population. And, you know, so much of this country, so much of the action, so much of the lived experience is happening out in the rural regions, more than 50% of the population. And, you know, we take on different projects at Human Rights Watch. So, you know, we've worked on the rights of farmers. We've worked on issues that affect the mahalla, the neighborhood committees, the neighborhood community. And so, you know, really our partners are anyone and everyone. As we said to the government when we met them in the Oli Majlis in the parliament, it's fascinating to see the parliament start to step up a bit and actually assert itself in the constitutional process. And Human Rights Watch and I think other organizations are interested in working with the other branches of government, of seeing checks and balances, of seeing a separation of powers. There are parliamentary committees that work on human rights. There's the Ombudsperson for Human Rights. And those bodies were criticized in the Karimov period, as you know, for really being just, you know, paper tigers or really rubber stamp institutions. And I think I sense some willingness among some members of parliament and some parts of the government bureaucracy that actually want to change that, really want to work together. So we had some good meetings with the Ombudsperson for Human Rights, for example. We also had some frank and difficult meetings with the Interior Ministry and with the State Religion Committee, where we had stark disagreements about what a political prisoner is. Of course, the government's position being that there are no political prisoners, and ours being diametrically opposed. But we do see them as partners in the sense that we have a joint responsibility to improve the situation in the country. We have different roles. Other partners, though, in civil society, I think, are journalists, of course. I've been meeting with journalists on this visit that are some of, as you know, some of the most well-informed individuals in any society. Bloggers, social media, wonks, you know, and activists from the regions that really are jacks of all trades, people that, you know, go into court and defend people as public defenders, but then do other things. So cotton monitors, people that go out into the fields, that can really be anyone.
So Steve,
it's a long list.
So Steve, yeah. We know that many human rights defenders were either jailed or lived under so much pressure that they left the country. Who is there in the country now currently doing real human rights work? Is there a new generation of defenders? Are they relevant?
You know, I think there is an emerging generation, but they haven't necessarily come out of the shadows yet. As I said, the conception of civil society that sometimes I think Human Rights Watch, human rights organizations dogmatically adhere to can be overly narrow. So there are times when people who aren't necessarily activists, but they're active in their communities, have really made a difference in Uzbekistan. People that studied abroad and came back and tried to launch various initiatives. I met a lot of impressive people. I met, you know, translators, people that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be activists, but they are willing to utilize the different mechanisms that are now available to report human rights abuses. Human rights work and human rights monitoring is changing. So I don't know if that generation it really feels comfortable yet to show itself, but it is emerging. And of course, I have to recognize that those that did stay in the country are incredibly courageous and they're still dealing with tremendous abuse. So we've seen the activist Malahat Ashankulova in recent days on a hunger strike. She has been really mistreated by the authorities. She monitors cotton. She monitors other issues like torture. And she's been unable to obtain a basic propiska, a registration permit, more or less because of her human rights work. And so I think those are the sorts of things that the government has to move on. There has to be an unambiguous message coming from the highest levels, from President Mirziyoyev, not just that they will tolerate human rights activism or that they won't jail human rights activists, but that we should see the president actually inviting these activists to meet with him, to work with him, there should be parliamentary committees that hold hearings for those activists that have been unregistered and in the shadows for so long.
Building mutual trust takes time and lots of effort, we know, from all the parties involved. Obviously, that creates tensions. How do you see yourself managing that?
Well, you know, I think the government understands our position very well. At least one of the things that I really liked about the experience that we had when we met with the government in September was the sense that no one was trying to tell me or tell Human Rights Watch that we should change our mandate or that we should stop being independent. There was no suggestion that us being a critical organization was going to make it impossible to be here. And so we did appreciate that. And, you know, as always, we want to push the issues that we see as most urgent. So I think really the focus here is on what the government needs to do, which is we're really encouraging President Mirziyoyev to send a message that things are really changing in a practical way on the human rights issues. Not just that we'll see more releases. Obviously, we need to see thousands of political prisoners released. We want to see access for the Red Cross. We want to see access for UN experts to come into the country. In fact, there was a UN expert on religion that was just in the country last month. Those are really helpful things. But I think on a sort of higher messaging level, President Mirziyoyev can do some symbolic things to show that those activists that were working in the shadows, that were basically criminalized for the last 12 years, are invited into the political process. They can testify at the Oli Majlis. They can be invited to high-profile events and conversations and dialogues with the government about how to improve conditions. So there should be a message that criticism is a good thing, especially when you're trying to make a transition from a situation that I think a wide consensus of both government and non-government officials, actors in this country, believe was a bad situation. So there's a lot of hope that I have. It will be difficult. And I think it's very important that the media be here, that Voice of America be here on the ground.
We want to be there.
Radio Free Europe and the BBC be here. We all need to sort of, I think, pry the space open as much as we can. The more engaged international organizations you have in Uzbekistan, I think that's going to offer support for the civil society.
Thank you, Steve. It's wonderful to talk to you. Obviously, there is a lot more to discuss, but this is the time we have. Enjoy Tashkent, enjoy Uzbekistan, and see you when you get back.
Salamat baling.
Those watching, we want to hear your views and insights too, so share with us on social media. Look for America Avaze. Steve Sverdlow joined us from Tashkent. I am Nabahar Imamova from Washington. Goodbye.